Or Anne, would you like to say anything to them?
Well, I don't know. I'll tell somebody when everybody gathers at 4:30. I'll tell you a little bit about myself, and maybe if there's anything that makes you want to jump in, just jump in. I'll tell you a bit about where I come from. And so I'm from an island off the coast of Canada, so Newfoundland. And it might help to know that 20,000 Newfoundland women married U.S. soldiers during World War II. So almost every Newfoundlander has family somewhere in the U.S.
Oh.
So I actually had an aunt who was married and lived in San Antonio and died there. Mm-hmm. So, but the first time I ever met San Antonio was not that long ago to visit her grave. It was lovely to do that. We've got relatives in Boston and in New York, and it's just really fascinating to me how many Newfoundlanders have Canadians. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing. So I grew up in a big family of eight. I'm the oldest of eight. The only one who went to university, and the only one who ever traveled off the island.
Wow.
So, yeah, a bit of a spirit of adventure. I don't know how that got in there, but it did. And so I met Redemptorists when I was in university. I was just studying history and education at the University of St. John's, and I belonged to the Cathedral Parish, but they didn't have much going on for young people. What the Redemptorist Parish did, they ran a youth retreat program. So I decided I was going over there and seeing what that was all about, and met the first Redemptorist I met was Father Mike Brown, who you know as the Superior General. But he was a deacon then. So at the time he seemed very, very old, but he was 24. I was 18, right? But he just seemed so old. And so I went on teaching. And decided to teach first in Labrador, so we have an Anito Air Base in Goose Bay, and watched the space shuttle land once. It was an adventure. And then I got a job where I really wanted to be, in a poor fishing community in Newfoundland. And I told them this, Father Greg will have heard this before, but I thought foolishly that I was there to teach children, and I was. But the very first day in that school, this parent, I could hear her the minute she entered the door, and she was yelling. And she just cursed all the way down the corridor about this woman who was given too much homework. So I didn't think I'd given any. I mean, I really didn't think there was anything objectionable. I'm not like that. But the problem, as we had a conversation, was that Gert couldn't read her lips. And so any homework was too much. And so once we identify the problem, well, there's always a way through. So I said, well, Gert, I can teach you to read. That would not be hard to do. And she stopped for a bit and said, you could do that? I'm not too old. I said, not a bit. She told me a few things about her life, and that she had escaped an abusive situation and was living with this other man. And did I have any problem with that? And I said, that doesn't affect your reading ability at all. No, it's all good. So I said to her, the best words of all, which turned out, was, Gert, go and you come and visit me on Tuesday night. But if there's anybody else you know who would like to learn to read, let's just make a group. At the end of about a month, there were 27.
Wow.
And so I got a few teachers with me, and we started an adult night school. And that was my joy. For the next 6 years, I loved the kids. I had a ball with the kids. But what I really took some real delight in was giving these adults to go out. So, at the same time, the parish priest was rather mentally ill and often couldn't be attentive to the people. So what would often happen to me was I'd get a call in the middle of the night that somebody was sick or dying. Would I come visit? Oh, I was 22 or 23. I didn't really think I had much to offer, but I couldn't say no either. So I would go, and then there was an old Redemptorist who had given me his phone number and said, if you ever need, call me. And I realized he knew the situation.
So I would call him, and he would come and be attentive. He'd visit the family, he'd do the funeral, and I just developed this relationship with him. So through that, I decided maybe the thing I was called to do wasn't teaching children so much as teaching adults, and something in terms of religious education, maybe. So I went off to Toronto after 6 years in a town that had one stop sign.
Imagine the horror.
And so on the very first day, I went to the Eaton Center to buy a typewriter. It was 1991. And I came out, I was just absolutely overwhelmed by this huge city. And what had I done? So I called a guy I had gone to university with who joined the Redemptorists in Toronto. And I said, Leo, I'm here. Where are you? He said, well, more to the point, tell me where you are. And I gave him my address. He said, oh, look out your back window. Our house is right there.
Oh, my God.
So I started going to visit the Redemptorist house, and I felt like I was home. And so that was the beginning of being asked to lead some youth missions and youth retreats with Redemptorists and run some youth programs, and then that kind of took off from there. So I was absolutely hooked. It took a long while to realize that a layperson could really have any kind of in-depth relationship. But I was really blessed in more than one way. We were running a youth program in Toronto. All the 3 years I lived there, I was taken on to lead a program called Serve. And it was 6 weeks of young adults coming to live with us. And we would put them in a full-time volunteer placement in Toronto. They'd come home, we'd lead programs and prayer and that kind of thing. And kind of give them an experience of how you might live a Christian life and build a Christian community. So the very first night that we were there getting ready to run the program, the kids hadn't come yet. And the doorbell rang, and our provincial, Father Ray Horrebo, had another Redemptorist with him at the door. This guy wanted to meet us. I had no idea who this man was, but his name was Father Juan Lasso de la Vega. He was the superior general. And I didn't have a clue. So I just said, come on, let's make tea. And we brought the tea down to the library in the basement. And there were two students and myself. And Father Lasso spent the whole night with us. And what he did was he took the globe off the bookshelf, put the globe on the coffee table, and spun it, and stuck his finger into the globe. And wherever his finger stopped, he told us, spent the whole night telling us a story about Burkina Faso in Africa. And who was living there, what Redemptorists were there, what life was like, and he kind of had me hooked. So at the end of the night, I kind of had clued in that this was a pretty high-powered individual, and he gave us a hug and he left, and the next night he came back. And he did exactly the same thing, and for 4 nights, he did the same thing with the two Redemptorist students and myself. He spun the globe, and he told us a story. And I was just, at the end of that, I was absolutely hooked. Just the way he was and the way he kind of chose to spend that time with us, really, we were kind of nobodies, right? And then the fifth night, he said, this is my last night. Take me to an Italian restaurant. So we looked at each other and well, let's take him to Villa Lucia. So we said, okay, we took him to this restaurant around the corner that we'd been to a couple of times, but not really, didn't know, other than it was Italian. And he, at the door, said in Italian to the man who ran the place, what's your name and where are you from in Italy? And the man answered him in Italian, my name is whatever his name was, and I'm from a place that you would never heard of, but his name is Scala on the Amalfi Coast.
Oh, my gosh.
And so he said, well, I'm a Redemptorist. Well, we couldn't tell him meant to be. And they made this lovely supper for us, and they were so attentive. And at the end of the night, Father Lasso, before he said goodbye, he said, just remember one thing, that you're Redemptorist too. And I kind of hung on to that for a long time. I think, and in my mind, there still is a real difference between, or it's a real thing to me, that I am Redemptorist, but not a Redemptorist. And I think that's true for all of us too. We are Redemptorist. Paul and Greg are Redemptorists. They are each is a Redemptorist, and there's something special about that. But we all belong to a family, and it was the first time for me it really opened up that there was such a thing as a Redemptorist family, and I'm so grateful that I came into the family at the time I did. Because with Father Lasso, a lot of things were opening up, opportunities for lay people, in a real sense that there was a bigger family. There was the professed members, and then there were others. And so it's really been a tremendous journey for me. Most times it's been as a volunteer. A couple of times I've worked in a Redemptorist parish, and then I've gone back to work in the diocese and the world that I'm from. And now since January, I've been working on an evangelization team and part-time coordinating partners in mission and working with people like Lee and Paul and Greg and trying to get things off the ground all over North America. And I have to tell you, it hasn't been hard work. There's been a real openness and energy around it. So, and at the same time, the general government kind of took a new lease on life with regard to partnership and mission. And they've kind of named me to an office. There's no, it's not like an office in terms of being in Rome and being paid to do it, but it's just kind of a sense that this is important for the congregation. And then I'm on the new general commission for partnership and mission. So it might help you to know that it's happening all over the world. And that there are Redemptorist associates all over the world. You can go to Portugal and meet them, and Spain and meet them, and Italy and the Philippines and Indonesia, and you can go to Niger and you'll find Redemptorist associates. And we're really just beginning to identify them and call them forth. So that's my story.